From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 26th day of April, 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's the Senior Grains Analyst at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And then later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, the U.S. Supreme Court is set tomorrow to hear a case on USDA's GMO regulatory authority. And the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is more concerned about Chinese regulatory authority and policy issues than the value of the nation's currency. And a new poll puts the average crude oil price for the year to be just about where it is today. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories later in the half hour. In the second half hour of our program today, on many of these stations and always online at willag.org, we'll discuss environmental issues with the president of a leading agricultural university in Brazil and hear what the data from the 2009 Illinois FBFM records can tell us about profitability on the farm last season. Hey, and don't forget, in just 26 minutes, we'll check in with the weather forecast. The folks at Chesapeake Energy are out today. Dale Moeller, a commodities meteorologist at AccuWeather, will join us to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast. And it all happens on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley at admworld.com.
In Chicago on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day lower. Nearby May contract and the wheat, a settlement price today in that soft red contract at 476, down 17 and a quarter. July at 488, 17 and a half lower. And September at 504 and three quarters, down 17 cents. May hard red at 490 and a half, down 15 and a quarter. May corn futures at 315, or rather 352 and a quarter, down three quarters of a cent. July at 359 and a half, a penny and a half lower. September at 368, down 1.5 cents. And December futures at 376 and a half, down a penny and three quarters. March contract 389 and a quarter, down 1 1/4. May beans at $9.98 and three quarters, a penny and a quarter lower. July at 10.09, down 1 cent. November at 977 and a half, down a penny and a half. May meal at 294.60, up 2.30. The oil up 6 cents, rather down 6 cents at 32.29. And the livestock futures were mixed on the afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a production of Illinois Public Media. Here are some of those numbers from the CME Group's livestock site. April live cattle futures, 99.52 and a half, up 30. June at 95.50, 67.5 cents higher. April feeders at $113.80 higher. May at 113.75, that's $1.17 and a half higher on the day. May lean hogs were down 57.5 cents, 86.82 and a half the settlement price. The June at 84.27 and a half, down 90 cents. From the crude oil pit, $83.98, a penny. $1.14 lower on the day. Ethanol at $1.58 and a half, unchanged. Natural gas down 0.2 cents at $4.25 and a half, and the heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.23 and 6 cents, down 1.4 cents. Gold futures $1,153.50, the settlement price up 40 cents, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 1,112.32, rather at 11,232. That's up 28.6 points for the afternoon. The U.S. dollar at 81.48, up 0.13. The CRB index at 278.38 is down 0.67. And the Goldman Sachs today down 3.69 at 545.17 on the afternoon.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Have you visited our website lately? Please do. The address is willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. There you'll find all of our daily agricultural programming, including podcasts of the pre-opening, opening, and closing market reports and Commodity Week. It's all at W-I-L-L-A-G.org. That's willag.org, and it's all absolutely free.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Monday afternoon. On the line with us to take a look at the agricultural futures markets is Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start with where you think this afternoon's crop progress report will show Illinois and the nation in terms of corn planting.
Well, I think the analysts are probably a little too conservative. I think they're just looking at past history and taking some of the most rapid progress reports in the past and saying, you know, that's close enough. We feel as a nation, we're probably 60% complete. We saw guys get real aggressive and put a lot of effort into it, a lot of long hours, and we feel that the nation is a lot further along than the preliminary estimates, anywhere from 45 to 50. I know there's some lower than that and some higher than that, but we feel that it's going to show a rapid number. And as far as state goes, we're looking up towards 80% on corn plantings. Beans, there's a few beans in the ground as a nation. When we start counting that, I imagine we'll probably in this 2-3% area, but that's mainly to the south. But I've heard beans in the ground as far as northern Illinois.
If your predictions were to come true this afternoon, how much of an impact would it have on overnight trade and day trade tomorrow?
Well, I think the trades pretty well knows that producers made rapid headway. I guess in past history, you know, early plantings have produced decent yield is sort of the mentality, but that's not 100% true either. You go past history here, the most rapid we've been planted this time of year is 52% complete, and that was in 2005 and 2006. And prior to that, in 2004, we were only 37% complete planted, and we had a yield of 160. In 2005, 2006, we had 148 bushels acre, 149 bushels acre. In 2007, we were only 23% planted, and we produced 150 bushels to the acre, and this is, well, 2 weeks from now. But what the point is that those 2 years we had the most aggressive planting place, we did not have record yields, and some of these producers we visit with tell us the best production has come from corn being put in the ground from about April 24th to through the first week of May, if not the second week of May. So we'll see. I know the hybrids are different. We got a long ways to go as far as growing conditions to go, so there's going to be great debate on what type of yield to put on it. But primarily with this early planting progress, got to say the crop's in a favorable position here to at least be in the upper 150s per acre.
There's a whole lot of weather between now and the time harvest goes around. Will it offer opportunities to the upside? I suspect it will. If so, what we really need to know is, do you have a prediction of where those opportunities might come?
Well, there's going to be ups and downs. Overall, we feel the risk is to the downside until we get in this first, second week in July. If you go clear back to day one, prior to the 2008 rally, a lot of the analysts were looking at some multi-cycle year lows here in 2010. We feel the market's in that type of mode here to do that. We don't feel we're going to zero, but we feel the risk is to the downside. Over the near term in here, got to look for last week's highs to be resistance in corn, moves back to that level, probably needs to be sold. If we take out the recent lows in here, we'll probably set the stage to drop another 20 cents. Bean-wise, we saw some reversal action here today. The key is whether we follow through on that type of technical action. If so, beans are probably in a position here to start to roll over too, Todd.
Let's take a look at the one where most of the action happened today. Wheat pit was lower both in Chicago and Kansas City, down pretty sharply, 17 cents. Why was that the case?
Various different things came out. One is probably the primary indicator that over 4,000 contract sell order was put into the electronic trade. There was no buy paper underneath the market, and that just pounded the market 30 cents instantly as the market tried to absorb that selling pressure. That's the biggest number we heard, 4,000. There was talk of maybe 2,000 lots for sale all at once, but there was just not enough paper there to absorb that. Then we saw buying corn, selling wheat on the spread. Then also, too, with the wheat conditions throughout the Midwest, they're expected to show some improvement here as we see this afternoon's good to excellent category bump up another 1% to 2%.
Yeah, what happened? Do we know why the wheat went off, though? Is there beyond, you know, that's a lot of sell orders, but what triggered it? Do we know?
I'm not for sure. When I talked to the guys at the desk there, the electronic desk, their best guess, it could have been an error. Instead of 400, it probably got punched in 4,000. You know, it could be one of those situations. The funds have learned that putting orders in that big in thin markets is not to their benefit, so odds are when it's all said and done, we feel it's probably going to come back as some type of key punch error.
If it comes back as a key punch error, the corn and beans held pretty strong in the face of that. Does that mean, and maybe you're telling me it doesn't, because it sounds like you're not too friendly either of those markets. I don't know whether it even termed you friendly. Do you think it would have an impact at all on the corn and the beans?
Well, it should provide support. You know, wheat moved higher in through here over the last couple of weeks with the beans. Seems the beans have been the most bullish, but yes, if we can sort of shake that off and find some demand coming forward here on this lower go, I would think it would help provide some stability to the whole complex.
Cattle futures were higher again today.
Yes, cattle and feed report, basically on feed numbers and placements, just a little less than expected, no bullish surprises. I think failure to see any real bearish news pop up there gave the market support. We'll watch the cash market real close here. We're still trading 98 to a dollar. You know, as long as we stay in this 98 to dollar area, you got to view the deferred futures as a discount and see if we can't narrow the basis there. The big event will be as we move into May and look at the old cold storage report to see what consumption and what supplies we have around as far as red meat goes, Todd.
All right. Thanks so much.
Very good.
That is Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. Happens every Monday afternoon.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You know, there are three ways, probably a bit more than that, but at least three ways you can listen to our agricultural programming on this radio station. You can hear us online at willag.org, or you can dial this phone number at 10:15 and 3:15 daily with the opening and the closing market numbers and a bit of analysis at 217-333-3434. That's 217-333-3434. We call it our mobile analyst portal. Now here's Dave Dickey with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the U.S. Supreme Court tomorrow will hear a case on USDA's oversight of biotechnology and the department's ability to allow those crops to be commercialized. The Obama administration backs Monsanto Company in arguing that a federal judge's national ban on Roundup Ready alfalfa went too far. Business and legal groups that have filed briefs backing Monsanto argue that if the ban stands, it threatens to make nationwide injunctions almost automatic in National Environmental Policy Act cases. Environmental groups argue Monsanto is attempting to write new law by arguing there can be no irreparable harm from genetic contamination by biotech crops. The head of the American Chamber of Commerce says U.S. firms working in China are more concerned about regulatory and policy issues than about pushing China to revalue its currency. AmCham President Christian Merck says that American businesses are encouraging new obstacles to market access as China's growing economy leads them to expand deeper into inland provinces. Half of the member companies surveyed by AmCham said a Chinese economic slowdown ranked as one of the top three risks in upcoming years, while 30% cited rising labor costs in China. A new poll suggests U.S. crude oil is expected to average $81.06 a barrel in 2010. The survey that was released today shows that analysts are pointing to growing demand in emerging economies, especially China, as prime drivers. The poll of 30 analysts showed a rising consensus forecast for the 12th consecutive month. Agricultural seed giant Monsanto hopes to launch genetically modified corn in India. The company is undertaking new field trials of the corn variety in collaboration with a southern India university. 75% of the new variety is intended for use as feed and starch, according to the Business Standard. India does not allow commercialized cultivation of genetically modified crops except for BT cotton, which it permitted in 2002. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Up next, farmers have moved quickly this spring to put a corn crop in the ground. We'll know more about that a bit later this afternoon. And then again tomorrow during our closing market report, we'll get the updates on crop progress. Be sure to stay with us then at this same time. But let's consider now the implications of planting soybeans during the last week of April in the northern half of the Corn Belt. It's probably okay to plant soybeans in the last week of April. The biggest concern, says University of Illinois Extension soybean specialist Vince Davis, is frost, as it concerns his state.
There's not a lot of risk of frost once we get to the month of May. If you look over the weather data for the last 20 years, we occasionally have frost in the first week of May in the most northern tier of Illinois, but it's usually less than about 5% of the time. So the risk of frost in the month of May is pretty low. And if you're planting soybeans in April, the date that you need to be most concerned about is the date that the seedlings emerge, which is going to be 7 to 10 days after they're actually planted. And so we generally say if you're planting April 20th to April 23rd, those seedlings probably aren't going to be emerged till around the 1st of May, and the risk of a killing frost is pretty low.
On the other hand, there is a substantial risk of putting a soybean seed into cold, wet soils and having it set, waiting for warmer weather. Although it's late enough now that Davis says planting date studies indicate the time has just about come to plant beans.
The best planting date can be anywhere from the 27th of April to May 9th, and it's difficult to determine how much response differences in soybean planting date between that last week of April and the first week of May. So anywhere in that two-week window is a really optimal two-week window to maximize yield, as long as the seedbed and the weather preparations, or the seedbed preparation and the weather conditions, are conducive for that. We don't see consistent yield losses to planting date start till somewhere after the first week of May, but certainly by about May 10th to May 15th, we're certainly losing yield to planting date in soybean.
What those dates suggest is that a producer might spend a bit more time taking care of pre-plant field operations, a better seed bed, weed control, maybe even paying some much-needed attention to the corn crop, nitrogen application, for example.
And when you're in the last week of April, first week of May, I would certainly say in a lot of cases, some of the corn activities would take some precedence over getting too overly ambitious on soybean and soybean management.
Not that there's anything wrong with taking advantage of the opportunity to plant soybeans in an attempt to maximize yield. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You are listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us to take a look at the agricultural cash grain market today is Greg Johnson of the Andersons. Good afternoon to you, Greg.
Good afternoon, Todd.
So farmers probably not in the field. We had, I guess, at my home, about an inch and three-tenths. How about there at the Andersons over the weekend?
Just under an inch. South of us, maybe a little bit less, half inch, but in some places just over an inch. So half inch, an inch was pretty common.
Enough to keep them out of the field, but maybe give them an opportunity to move grain. Yeah. Where is there any reason for them to do so?
If you've got quality issues, that would be one reason, but from a flat price point of view, probably not, and basis levels continue to get better, so from a basis point of view, probably not.
So we looked at that over the weekend on Commodity Week and thought about it just a bit. What do you see when we get out into June and July? There'll be corn, if they can store it that long, will it be worthwhile for them to do so?
Last year it was. Even with a big carryout, I think the lateness of the planting last year had farmers holding on to that crop a little bit longer, and so we kind of created a squeeze even though we had plenty of corn. This year I'm not so sure the farmers are quite as worried at this point about the crop prospects for new crops. So on any kind of a 15 to 20 cent rally, I think farmers will be selling corn on rallies and moving that old crop corn. So I guess I look for the traditional strength in the basis improving, but not the the abnormally large basis improvement that we saw last year.
Everybody seemed to be in favor of making new crop sales when prices were a bit higher, and I only mean a bit higher. Is that for corn and soybeans, and have you changed your mind at all over the last couple of days?
Old crop corn, we still want to sell on 10, 15, 20 cent rallies. The new crop corn, I still think we can see $4 on the futures. I don't want to get too excited about selling new crop corn, but I would definitely make a distinction between playing defense on old crop and being a little bit more patient on the new crop.
What's the biggest thing in the offing over the next 3 months? Is it just the weather, or is there other issues that we ought to be aware of?
I think China, the potential that China may come in. There were some rumors this morning that China may be interested in buying U.S. corn for only the second time in about 20-some years. Freight differentials work out to where it works out to about a $15 a ton advantage for them to import corn out of the U.S., which is about 40, 42 cents a bushel. So there's a lot of paperwork and a lot of uncertainty, so commercials have to be pretty confident of that. But I think that might be one thing that might put a little spark in this corn market.
Your bids for the day?
Cash corn is $3.46 for old crop, $3.46 also for new crop. Old beans $9.94, new beans $9.37, and new wheat is $4.38.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson of the Andersons. We'll return in just 2 minutes with the agricultural weather forecast.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at Stuart-Peterson.com. Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, Hudsonville, Illinois, and Crescent City, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market.
Economists are more optimistic about prospects for growth this year as industries increasingly report better profits and add new jobs. 70% of those surveyed by the National Association for Business Economics believe real GDP will grow by more than 2% this year, up from 61% who said the same in January. 24% are predicting real GDP will grow by more than 3% in 2010, up from 14% earlier this year. Tyson Foods Incorporated spent almost $612,000 in the first quarter to lobby the government on ethanol policy, diesel tax credits, and other issues. That's more than the $592,000 it spent in the year-ago period, but less than the $626,000 it spent in the fourth quarter of 2009. The Springdale, Arkansas-based meat producer also lobbied on immigration, access to foreign markets, including Korea, Japan, China, and Mexico, a trucking pilot program with Mexico, and other issues. Besides Congress, the company lobbied the Federal Maritime Commission, the U.S. Trade Representative, the Department of Commerce, the Department of Agriculture, and other agencies. And Caterpillar today reported a stronger-than-expected quarterly profit. Peoria, Illinois-based Caterpillar reported a first-quarter net profit of $233 million, or 36 cents a share, compared with a year earlier loss of $112 million, or 19 cents a share. And that's a look at today's business news.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It's a Monday afternoon. The folks at Chesapeake Energy are away today. They're actually in flight. Fortunately for us, the folks at AccuWeather in State College, Pennsylvania, are on the line. Dale Moeller, a meteorologist there, is with us. Good afternoon to you, Dale, and thanks for filling in today. We do appreciate that.
Sure, no problem.
This morning, in my inbox, I saw a release, and maybe we'll start with this, about the wheat crop in India, suggesting that that wheat crop was in pretty good shape and that even the warm weather hadn't really damaged it very much. What do you know?
Yeah, that's right. In fact, the crop matured a little earlier this year ahead of all the heat. Normally starts to heat up in April across northern India and especially into May before the monsoon rains arrive and cool things off. But this year things were ahead of schedule. They had some pretty good rains in the late fall and winter. And so they were able to harvest most of the crop before the real heat set in the last few weeks.
So it should be a big crop there then?
Looks like a pretty big crop, bigger than last year's by about 2 million metric tons. So they're in pretty good shape over there. Of course, they're not one of the biggest producing countries in the world, but they are a player. And so what goes on over there is important.
Quite a bit of rain over the weekend. How much did we get and who missed it, if anybody?
Yeah, the rainfall was very important. This was one of those late spring type of storms that come slow moving across from the central part of the country, what we call an upper-level disturbance that cuts off, a cutoff, if you will, because the upper-air winds blow in a circle around it, and once that happens, the storm is cut off from the main flow. It moves a lot slower, and if you're underneath the storm, you can get rained on for a couple of days, and that's what happened if you're in Missouri and Illinois. Did very well at this. Columbia, Missouri had over 3 inches, closer to 4 inches. Down in Cape Girardeau, they did well also, probably about, I think it was 295 is what they had down there. So a good chunk of the middle part, the southwestern corner of the belt, did very well. I would say more average rains or moderate rains from Illinois on eastward through Ohio, although locally there was as much as 2 inches up around Toledo. There were some areas that had a little less rain, and those included Minnesota, Wisconsin, and up into central Michigan. Folks in there had about half an inch. So with the dry weather that we've had coming out of for most of April and now going into May, we could use a little more rain up across the northern third of the belt.
And how is Iowa faring? That's the state you missed in that process.
Yeah, Iowa's a very important corn-producing state, and the southern two-thirds of the state did very well, 1 to 2 inches in general. So this was a real good soaker for most of the belt. I'd say 80% of the belt had over an inch of rain.
Temperatures expected to stay fairly cool this week, and does cool mean average or does cool mean below average this time around?
Well, cool, if it is cool, it's going to be a few degrees below normal. And that's early on here. There's some chilly air coming down behind this particular storm for a couple of days. But it looks like it's going to warm up nicely starting Wednesday afternoon in the west and especially Thursday into Friday in the east. I think temperatures, as it warms up, you get back up in the 70s and low 80s for a day or two. But I think that's the warmest weather that we're going to see here for a little while, because it looks like once we get into the weekend and especially into next week, pretty active storm track is going to send several fronts and several storms eastward from the Rockies through the Midwest. And so instead of getting a storm maybe once every 3 or 4 days, we may get a storm every other day. So it's going to get pretty wet and stay fairly wet for, it looks like, about a week period, starting Thursday, Friday in the west and by the weekend in the east.
That's Dale Moeller with AccuWeather out of State College, Pennsylvania. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. This is the Farming World News and interviews from the Land Grant in Urbana-Champaign. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Today we'll talk with the president of the Federal University of Viscasa, Luis Claudio Costa. Our topic, climate change and its impact on agriculture in Brazil. You're trained in meteorology. Where did you train?
In Reading, England, UK.
Tell me about some of the work that you've done in terms of the impact of climate change on agriculture and the paper that you talked about at the University of Illinois.
Yes, well, I have worked since my PhD with climate change in agriculture, mainly on soybean. But in our days, I have worked with soybean, maize, and sugarcane, and coffee bean. I have been doing some field experiments on that, see the effects of temperature and drought on crop growth and yields. And also I have been working with crop growth modeling to see what's going to happen in the future. And I showed here in Illinois a paper that my team just put out last year saying that there is a room to increase yield even in a climate change condition if you use the right technology. So I showed that for a C3 and a C4 plant.
So that would be C3 would be for soybeans, C4 would be for maize or corn, as we call it in the United States. What weather conditions did you and models did you use to put into place? And to begin with, maybe we should talk about those weather models and what they show in different areas of the future.
Well, I have been used the models that have been put out by IPCC, and also have been used with some models from INPE, is a research institute in Brazil, very well known in this area, and also some models from Hartley Center. I used those models, and I put it in the crop growth modeling to see what's going to happen in the future. And also, we have used some models of extreme temperature and drought.
Your suggestion was that not only would it get warmer, but that it would also get colder, potentially, that extreme temperatures would be there, and that there would be much wider variation in temperature swings and droughts and moisture content in the future.
Yes, unfortunately for agriculture, the most important issue in climate change is not just the average increase, it's the extreme temperature, the extreme events, drought, excessive rainfall, and lower temperature. Anyway, it's going to happen a lot because we are not going to change just the mean of the temperature. We are change also the variance of the rainfall, the temperature. So the extreme events is very hard for the farmer to cope with.
I made note that you suggest that the minimum nighttime temperatures will be higher. Is that correct?
Is that correct? In Brazil, it has been happening everywhere. And if you increase the night temperature, you got higher respiration. And if you got higher crop growth respiration, the yield will be lower. And it happens everywhere in Brazil with bean, maize, and other crops.
Yeah, this is a very large problem. And to put it in simple terms, the crop doesn't get a chance to rest, that it's working continuously. And so it's working much harder because the temperatures are high enough that it continues to try to grow. But when it does that, it just gets tired, I suppose.
Absolutely. Even so, if you look at the night, you see that, of course, we don't have the sunshine, then we don't have photosynthesis. We know that the respiration goes on 24 hours a day, but the daytime, we do have photosynthesis, so the balance can be a positive one. But during the night, if you increase the temperature, we won't have respiration. So, as you said, the crop goes on and goes on, and the yield will be lower. It has been happening in Brazil in several places there.
You suggest that it will take technology in order to continue to increase yields. If technology cannot keep pace, what's the prognosis for yields?
Of course, technology is not going to solve all the problem, but management also is very important here. We can see a lot of management issue that can be done to cope with this problem. But technology will be very important, new variety, a variety that can cope better with drought, with high temperature. So we have been working a lot on that in Brazil, and I know everywhere people have been doing that because we need to have different varieties, variety that will be able to cope with climate change condition.
Do you consider last year's drought conditions or events in Brazil that dramatically reduced the soya crop to be part of climate change or a natural condition that occurs periodically in your Brazilian climate?
Scientifically, it's very hard to say that it's linked with climate change. But I must say that all the indications that we have show that in the last 5 to 10 years, climate change has been have a big role in playing with the reduced yield and the drought and the higher temperature and the extreme events, climate events that we have been having in Brazil. But as I said to you, it's very hard to say scientifically. But I don't have any doubt at all personally, that climate change is already going on. What we need to answer now, where is it going to finish? See, but I'm quite sure that those events that we have been have there has to do with climate change.
What types of mitigation would you expect might work to bring us to a finish?
Well, in Brazil, for example, we need to do and we have been doing a lot of work on to reduce deforestation. It's very important for us in Brazil. It's the big issue. We've been doing that. Last year, we have a reduction of 8% on deforestation, and it's still going on this year, so it's very important for us. Everywhere, we need to decide what to do. I mean, each country need to decide what he will do. In Brazil, we try to make our homework, and the homework should be the deforestation.
When you look out at climate change into 2090, what do you think are the primary research issues that universities like Illinois, a land grant, Purdue, Iowa, Viscosa need to do to make sure that corn, soybean, sugarcane, maybe other crops, soybean, or coffee, might be able to continue to yield? But what are the primary focus for research?
Well, it's adaptation. We need to look at, the new varieties that will have more ability to cope with droughts and higher temperature events. And I think the most important bit now is to try to find new varieties with abilities to cope with climate change. And, of course, I'm talking about adaptation. Also, we need to work on management condition. How can we manage the crops to cope with climate change? Is it possible to do something about it? Is it possible to grow, for example, in Brazil, we'll be doing that trees and soybean together and grass, and you can create an environment that is going to be colder than we expect with climate change condition.
Well, on that note, and I just don't know the answer to this question, do Brazilian farmers do primarily conventional till for soybean? And I'm going to make some fast assumptions. Let me know if I'm wrong, that most of the acreage in Brazil is actually in soybean as opposed to other crops. So do they do conventional tillage methods or do they do no-till methods? And if they were to adapt to no-till, would that help mitigate a problem? Because the soils would be cooler if they did.
That's true. Unfortunately, most of them still do conventional till, but it has been increased, the people that are doing now. A non-tillage method has been increased, and it helps a lot with water use efficiency, the temperature. But unfortunately, we have still to increase a lot of people that will do non-till process now.
Let's switch topics just a bit. You're here at the University of Illinois. You've signed an MOU. What kinds of things do you hope that your university and the University of Illinois can collaborate on in the future?
Well, as you are aware of, University of Illinois is very well known in the world for his expertise, not only in agriculture, but it's a very famous university. And I'm quite sure that for Viçosa University to be linked with you in different fields of knowledge would be very important for us. Also, University Federal of Viçosa is very important on the Brazil side. We start in 1926. Unfortunately, The institution, university in Brazil, were very young. The oldest one has no more than 100 years. But we started as an agriculture university. And after that, now we got all the field of knowledge. And we are trying to be an international university, mainly on the South-South collaboration. And I think I was telling that with President Lula in a meeting that we had with the president of university in Brazil, that to do a very good South-South collaboration is important to pick up important strategic partners on the North. And I think Illinois, by its expertise, is one of strategic partners for us.
South-South would be in the Southern Hemisphere, so it would be South America, Africa, some participation in those countries. You're very interested in food security issues. What might the University of Illinois bring to that potential issue? For instance, it seems to me that because you're in Brazil and you're in a tropical area, you would bring the cultivars in particular, and you might have some social issue, social background and sciences that you can bring to bear on food security. What might the University of Illinois be able to bring to bear?
Well, University of Illinois, first, it has a lot of experience in working in Africa. It's very important because you do have a long-term experience on that. Also, you do have a lot of scientific knowledge that can be applied there, even if there is some adaptation. Then we can use the expertise from Viçosa and from Rio to work together. And also, you do have a lot of experience working on poverty and food security. We can use your experience, and also we have ours. We can do some adaptation if it's needed. But I think it would be nice to work together with yourself and Viçosa, Illinois, and, for example, let's work with a partner in Africa. We also, we do have some, as you know, some countries in Africa that are Portuguese speakers. So it would be nice also for yourself to help to work with a Brazilian university as Viçosa. Then you can reach there easily. And for us also, as we do know there are some English country speakers, it would be nice to work with you. And again, I think it could be a win-win collaboration.
Win-win collaboration for who?
For both and for the world, I guess. I mean, the people that are now in poverty. I think it's very important, I keep saying that at my university, to do now an international link, we need to work with different kind of situation, not just on the scientific point of view, but we need to work with solidarity, we need to work with compassion, we need to see the human side of it. So I think it would be a win-win for the people that needs now to get out of the situation that they are in this time.
How quickly do you think that the University of Illinois and Viçosa can come to some kind of beginning of collaboration?
I have made an invitation for the people from here to be there this year. We intend to get everything organized this year. Some people from here, they are decide who is going to be there in Viçosa. We are going to have a meeting, a small meeting, to get a brainstorm, to get the ideas organized, and then to apply with a partner. We got some, it's possible to get some money from Brazil. It's possible to get some money from abroad. We are going to have a high partner in Africa. So I think we need to be very quick. I was telling people that I didn't came here, and I know that Illinois don't want it, just to sign a MOU. I need to, you know, we need now to keep going. It's not just for the picture, for the photos. We need now to get the results because the world and the people need it.
Mr. Costa, good luck in your work and in the partnership with the University of Illinois.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me here.
Luis Claudio Costa is the president of the Federal University of Viçosa, and his topics here were climate change and its impact on agriculture, and he was here on campus to sign a memorandum of understanding. So there might be some technology that changes hands from Brazil and the United States. You've been listening to the Farming World News and interviews from the Land Grant in Urbana-Champaign. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
It's National Pretzel Day. The hard pretzel was the lucky result of a 17th century Pennsylvania baker's helper who accidentally overbaked a batch of soft pretzels. Not only was the batch crunchy and tasty, the master baker realized the moisture-less pretzel would keep fresh longer. On this day in agricultural history in 1921, the first U.S. broadcast of the weather was made from St. Louis over radio station WEW for the federal government. In 1986, a Chernobyl nuclear plant in the Ukraine exploded in what was the worst nuclear disaster in history. In addition to the human toll, agriculture and livestock was contaminated by radiation in large areas of Europe for years to come. In 2005, a herd of buffalo escaped from a farm and wandered around a Baltimore, Maryland suburb, disrupting traffic and shutting down several major highways. Police eventually herded them onto a nearby tennis court. And in 2006, Chicago banned the sale of foie gras. The ban, adopted on a 48-1 vote of the Chicago City Council, made restaurants and retail outlets selling the fatty livers of geese and ducks subject to a $500 fine. Chicago Mayor Richard Daley was less than enthusiastic. He was quoted as saying, "We have children getting killed by gang leaders and dope dealers, and we're dealing with foie gras? Let's get some priorities." And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield. Support for the Closing Market Report.
You're listening to The Farming World from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. In the second half of our program today, we'll talk with Dwight Robb with the Illinois FBFM Association. That's Farm Business Farm Management. He's located here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois and just put together a study about the production cost for the 2009 crop year. Dwight, thank you so much for being with us. Tell me about the production cost last year.
2009 was a trying year for most of the farmers in the state of Illinois. The year started out on a different note, and certainly ended up on a different note, too, with as late as harvest was. Certainly put a challenge to our 2,624 farms that were in our study for this past year. We were below average for the first time in 5 years. Lower corn yields in some parts of the state. We also had some much higher drying and storage costs than we're used to. We can budget numbers, but occasionally we get a year that's a little bit out of the ordinary, like we had in 2009, and we end up spending quite a bit more money than we'd planned on. Returns across the northern part of the state, the northern two or three tiers of counties in Illinois, suffered some poorer corn yields than the rest of the state did, and the guys down in the southern part of the state are grinning from ear to ear because their corn yields were fantastic down there for that part of the state, and their net farm incomes matched.
Yeah, what we would call their salaries range pretty heavily from the north to the south, and they don't normally. The guys up north made as little as $2,200, and the guys in the south, according to your FBFM records, made as much as $90,000. But on average, it was not a particularly good year for Illinois farmers.
A year of what I would call back to normal, after you consider what we had in 2007 and 2008. You know, those 2 years were just remarkably good years in terms of incomes. In 2009, not that it wasn't a good year, but it was more of a back to normal or a back to an average type of a year.
Tell me about yields and prices for the crops that the producers in the FBFM record-keeping system managed to pull through last year?
Well, corn yields by our FBFM records were down about 12 bushels from the year before. We had 194 bushel average corn yield for 2008 and had 182 bushel corn yield for 2009. So down about 12 bushels. As incomes go, so goes corn yield. So they tend to travel together. Bean yields were only off a bushel. We were at 51 for 2008 and then down to just 50 bushels for 2009 for the state as a whole.
Take a look at the different types of farms in the state. Those give you a different view of what happened, especially if you were a livestock producer as compared to a grain producer.
Certainly. And as we divvy up our farms by farm type, those grain farms floated to the top this year in terms of earnings. Those grain farms were highest in terms of earnings, followed by beef farms, dairy farms, and hog farms. Although it's interesting, if you look back through some of our information, you only have to go back about 5 years when it was the hog farms that had the highest earnings. So things can change in a hurry.
You know, one of the interesting points I picked up out of the article that folks can find on the FarmDoc website in the farm management section was that while earnings last year or salary was lower and the lowest in 5 years for producers in the state of Illinois, their government farm program payments were also lower. And you thought that might have been a little different.
Yeah, every year is different. The government payments that came in for 2009 were much more only in the line of what we would call a direct payment. There wasn't a loan deficiency payment for the most part last year. Wasn't a countercyclical payment. So those direct payments were the only thing that were there. They've run on average somewhere between $20 and $25 per acre. But the ACRE program itself, ACRE from the Farm Service Agency, the ACRE program was new for us last year, and those government payments were down some last year. Our theory is that is because of the sign-up for the ACRE program, because one of the givebacks at the producer level for signing up for the ACRE program was to take 20% less in government payments in that direct payment.
Do you know what percentage of your grain farmers signed up for ACRE that are in the FBFM?
Don't know those numbers right off the top of my head. I would venture a guess that of our FBFM cooperators, there may be a higher percentage of our cooperators who have signed up for that ACRE program than there may have been out of the farm population in general.
Okay, now let's turn our attention to cost directly. So what were the high cost issues last year?
Cost were the issues last year. Our crop total cost we divvy up into seed, fertilizer, and chemicals. And 2008 versus 2009, they were up quite a bit. But think back, especially for soil fertility, when we started incurring some of those costs for the 2009 year. It was about this time of the year, 2 years ago, in that March, April, May time frame in 2008, when some of our fertility costs started to run up on us. All forms of N, even dry fertilizer, started to run up on us. And as we acquired some of those input materials early in the year. You know, usually we're prepaying expenses in November and December maybe of 2008, but in this case we were prepaying expenses in March, April, and May of 2008. Those show up on our records in 2009. We keep our records on an accrual basis, so what was prepaid in 2008 for 2009 shows up on our 2009 records. Those fertility costs were up 31% from the year before.
As we close this out, do you think the 2010 numbers will be better?
I think the 2010 numbers
have... At least for cost?
For cost, I think they do. Obviously, we've seen some of the fertility costs come down, both dry and nitrogen. If we use trend yields and average prices, I think we're settled in maybe for another year of back to normal.
Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
That's Dwight Robb with the Illinois FBFM Association. He's located here in Mumford Hall on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You've been listening to The Farming World. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. You have a good day.